Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf. Today's daf has been sponsored by Mr. Joe Alaham in honor of the rabbi. Today's daf has been dedicated in memory of Hakam Baruch Rafael ben Miriam and Abraham ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichem Began Eden. Amen. We are beginning on Sadditet Amud Bet on the bottom. Amar Rava, two lines on the bottom. Beshitali, it's pashut, it's simple. Mayim al gabe mayim hainu hanachatan. That water on water is considered at rest. Meaning, when a person has a well, the well is filled with water, so the water is on top of water. So the top level of water is considered resting on the water beneath it. And that's considered a legitimate hanaha, meaning if a person took some water, it'll be considered a legitimate akira to be hayav. Why? Because we consider the water one entity. It's all considered one, and therefore it's resting on the floor of the bor, which let's say is 4x4. We're talking about, well, let's say the board is in a shuti yachid, it's 4 in width and 10 in depth. So all the water is considered one entity, and therefore it's considered resting on the floor of the board. And therefore if you take from any of the water, you're going to be considered making a legitimate akira. And therefore wherever you place it down, it'll be considered a hanaha. And the Gemara continues and says, egoz al gabe mayim. However, a nut that is resting on top of the water, lav hainu anahatan, that is not considered resting, and therefore if you take it off the water, it's not considered an akira. Again, to be considered an akira, it has to be munach first, it has to be rested first. So therefore the Gemara is telling you that an egoz on water is not considered anahat. Two reasons are given in the Rishonim why not. One explanation is because it's always moving. But therefore it cannot be considered munach unless it has a stable resting. Here the nut on the water always is moving. Or others explain that water is not considered a substantial base for something to be munach on it, which means it has to be placed on something that is considered hashuv. A water would not be considered a substantial base in order to hold considered the egos to be munach. Ba'e Rava. The Gemara has a question in the name of Rava. Egos bichli. So now it combines the two questions. It says, let's say you have an egos, a nut in a keli, in a vessel. Vichli tzaf al gabe mayim. And now you have the nut that's in the vessel and it is floating on the water. So the question is, where do you go after? Mi amrinan batar egoz azlinan. If you're going to go after where the egoz is resting on, well, v'ha'anayah. So it's resting on the keli. And therefore it's considered munah. And therefore if you take the egoz, it's going to be considered an akira, because you follow it going on the keli itself. Or dilma batar kli azlinan. Or do you go after the keli that the egoz is in, and since the keli is resting on the water, therefore va'alonaya, and therefore it's not considered munah. So the Gemara says on this, tiku, Gemara has a sheila on this, an egoz in the keli, where do you go after? Do you go after the egoz, and therefore it's considered resting in the keli, and therefore it's considered an akira, or do you go after the keli which is resting in the water, which is not considered a hanaha, therefore it's not going to be considered a akira? The Gemara leaves that in a tiku for the Awanavi. Now the Gemara discusses another dilemma. Shemen al gabe yayin. In the olden days, they used to store in their barrels simultaneously oil and wine. The oil obviously would float to the top, and the wine would be right beneath it. So the Gemara wants to know, Shemen al gabe yayin. You have the oil on top of the wine. And now we want to know on Shabbat, is it considered munah? Is the shemen considered resting on the yayin? And therefore, again, if a person would take from the shemen, it's considered an akira. So the Gemara says, Mahloket Rabbi Yohanan ben Nuri v'Rabbanan. It's actually Mahloket Tanaim. Ditnan, we learned in the Mishnah, shemen shetzaf al gabe yayin. We're discussing over here oil of teruma that is in the same barrel as yayin of teruma, okay? Benagar tevul yom b'shemen, and a Tevul Yom touched the Shemen. Tevul Yom is somebody that went to the Mikveh because of Tum'ah, however he did not yet pass through sunset. As we learned in Masechet Berachot, on Daf Bet, that it's not enough for a person who received Tum'ah to go to the Mikveh, he has to wait till what's called the Erev Shemesh. Until he waits till the Erev Shemesh, he is still able to posel Terumah. Meaning if he touches Terumah, Terumah will become Pasul. However, it should be pointed out that the Tevul Yom, when he touches Terumah, it ends there, the Tum'ah. It does not have the ability to transfer Tum'ah to the next stage. So now we're talking about a Tevul Yom. What did the Tevul Yom do? He touched the oil that was in the barrel above the yayin of Terumah. So the Gemara says, Lo pasal ela shemen. According to Hakamim, only the shemen that he touched becomes pasul, and not the wine underneath it. So what does that show you? That obviously they hold that it's not considered one. It's considered separate, which means we don't consider it one entity. That's why just what he touched becomes tameh, and not the wine underneath it. How would that translate the Gaber, the laws of Shabbat, since it's considered a separate entity, so therefore it's not considered munah, all on the bottom of the barrel, it's considered as if it's resting on the wine, which is not considered a hanaha, and therefore they have no problem if you will oker the shemen on Shabbat from the barrel, it's not considered an akidah. Whereas Rabbi Yohanan ben Nuri omer, shneim chibur zeh lazeh. He clearly says, Elanyan Terumah, we consider them connected. They're attached, so to speak. And therefore, if the Tevul Yom touches the Shemen, the Yain becomes Pasul as well. Why? Because it's all considered one. If it's all considered one, it's all resting on the bottom of the barrel. And therefore, if you take from the Shemen, it's considered an Akira. So therefore, the question that we ask, when you have Shemen al-Gabe Yain, so that's going to be a machloket, Rabbi Yohanan ben Nuri and Hakamim, and Yan Shabbat, is it going to be considered an akira or not? Hakamim that say that by terumah, only the shemen becomes pasul. Why? Because it's not considered chibur, it's not considered attached. So therefore, by taking the shemen, it's not considered munah al-gabe ayayin, it's not considered one, therefore it's not going to be considered an akira, the gabe shabbat. Whereas Rabbi Yohanan ben Nuri says, no, it's chibur. If you touch the shemen, the whole entire barrel becomes tameh, including the yayin underneath it. Therefore, it's chibur, it's one. Therefore, it's like mayim al gabe mayim, like we learned. Water on the water, it's one entity, and therefore you're going to be hayab. It would be considered, I should say, an akira, and if you be maniyah somewhere else, then you'll be hayab. Amar Abaye. Abaye discusses another case. Bor b'rishut rabim. Person has a bor, a pit, let's say, in the public domain. Amuka asara v'rechava shmona. It is 10 deep and 8 wide. So obviously it is enough measurement to be considered a deshut hayahid. It has 8 width. And the what happened? Vezarat netocha mahaselet. And one threw into the pit a mahaselet, a mat. Hayav. So the first deen is hayav. Now this deen seemingly is a little obvious, because bottom line, you threw a mat into a pit that has the measurement of a deshut hayahid. That means you went from reshut harabim into reshut yahid, so it's obvious that you're going to be hayav. That she says this is a setup for the next case. Heleka b'mahaselet. However, let's say you took the mahaselet, that mat, and you placed it down the center of the pit, where now you divided it. Which means you took a pit that was 8 tefahim wide, 10 tefahim deep, by placing this mat down the center of it, now it's not even 4 on either side, because the mat itself does take up some width. So now it's like you made a board 3.9 on one side width by 10, and 3.9 on the other side by 10. So now the question is, what happened? Here seemingly, it happened simultaneously. You made a hanaha, and at the same time you made the hanaha, you were mevatel the mechisa of the bor. So that is actually similar to a question that we had on yesterday's daf with Rabbi Yohanan, where you had a bor that was 10, and you placed some dirt into the bor, right? So the placing of the dirt made the bor 9, right? But simultaneously you have a hanaha, with bitul mechitza, breaking the domain. So the question over there, Rabbi Yohanan left it in abeyance. He had a question: do you consider it hayab? Do you consider it a legitimate hanaha? Or do you say no, that at the time of the hanaha, bottom line, it broke the shi'ur, and therefore you're going to be patur? While that was a question according to Rabbi Yohanan, it seems Abaye did not have a dilemma, because clearly he's saying a very similar case. You're taking a mechitza, a mahatzelet, and you're sticking it into the board. At simultaneously, when you make the hanacha, you're breaking the measurement, and his deen is patur. He clearly says in that case patur, but it's not considered making a hanacha in a reshut yachid. Why? Because at the time of the hanacha, you do not now have a reshut yachid anymore. Why? Because you lost the measurement. Right? It went from being 8 tefachim wide, by splitting it down the center with this mahatzelet, it went to becoming less than 4 width on each side. And therefore you did not make a hanacha in a reshut hayachid according to Abaye. So that's simple according to him. However, the Gemara says, the Abaye dipshit alem, the Abaye was pashutim, the mahatzelet mevatla mechitza, that the mahatzelet that you stick in there is mevatel the mechitza, and he has the ability to nullify the reshut yachid. Now, even though it might not be so common to leave a mahatzelet in a pit, which means, what's the deed of bitul? The logic of bitul is that since it's going to stay there, so therefore becomes part of the board itself and has the ability to break up the measurement. So if he holds that a mahatzelet in a pit, which is, let's say, not as common as other cases, and still he says it has the ability to be mevatel, kol sheken chol yad mevatla mechitza, all the more so when you stick dirt into a bor, which the dirt belongs in the bor, everybody leaves the dirt in the bor, all the more so it'll have the ability to break the shi'ur of the bor, and therefore you're going to be patur. Which means, what Rabbi Yohanan questioned on yesterday's daf to Abaye, pashut, Abaye even takes it a step further. Not only the obvious case of the dirt in the bor, which a person obviously leaves the dirt in the bor, then therefore it's going to consider taking away from the shi'ur of the bor, therefore you're going to be patur, but even in the case of a mahatzelet, which is less of a case where you mevatel it in the board, and still if you place it down the center of the board, it's going to take away from the shul and you're going to be patur. However, Rabbi Yohanan, demibaya lecholya, but Rabbi Yohanan, who had a question on the case of cholya, mehatzelet pshita delo mevatla mechitza. According to Rabbi Yohanan, from the fact that he didn't ask his question by mahatzelet, to him, for sure it's considered not mevatel and you're going to be hayav. Because he only had his question by the case of Chulya. He should have asked his case by the case of Mahatzelet. That would be a bigger Hiddush. Because you don't, it's less Mevatel and Mahatzelet in a Mor. From the fact he didn't ask his question by the case of the Mahatzelet, must be all that case is indeed Hayav. And therefore he only asked by a Chulya. So because we have a great Machloket now between Abaye and Rabbi Yohanan on a dilemma that we discussed yesterday. The case of a board that was 10 and one threw into it, a board was 10 and one threw into it chulya to make it 9, whereas Rabbi Yohanan had that question in abeyance. Abaye is pashutim, that in that case you're going to be patur, as well as the case of the mahaselet, Abaye will say be patur, where you broke the board in half, now you don't have the measurement of the reshut yachid on either side, whereas Rabbi Yohanan will say in that case of the mahaselet pashut, you're going to be hayav. Now the only question the Shonim ask on this is the first case of Abaye. The first case of Abaye is you had a board that was 10 deep and 8 wide. You threw a mahaselet in there. Now automatically by throwing the mahaselet in there, you're going to take away from the measurement somehow. If it lands, let's say, flat, so now it's not going to be a board of 10 anymore. If it lands straight up, you're taking away from also the shi'ur. But let's say it lands flat, to make it an easy case. If it lands flat, let's say, the mahaselet on the board. So now it's the same she'ela. Bottom line, now you have a board of 9. So therefore you should be patur. Why throwing it in
according to Abaye, is Pashut, you're going to be Hayav. So the Rashba answers, obvious answer, that there when you're throwing it in, by the fact that you're throwing it in, shows that you're not going to mevatel it in there. You're not leaving it in there, which is when the guy came and placed it in there and he fixed it and split up the board. It obviously shows why he wants to leave it in the board. That'll have the ability to break the shi'ur. But when a guy just throws it in there, he's not going to leave it in the board, and therefore it does not have the ability to break the shi'ud of the board. Therefore, indeed, you're going to be hayab. Even though simultaneously when it landed, it took away from the shi'ud of 10, still you're going to be hayab. There's a difference when you don't have coming out to be mevatelin in the board than if you are. Now, agreed. If let's say the guy took this mahasirat and said, I'm throwing this and I'm mevatelling it into the board, even if he threw it, he would be patur, because it's the same logic. But we're talking about a case where the guy threw it in and doesn't have kavanah to nullify it in the board. That's not the normal case like that. Comes the Gemara and says, V'amar Abaye, Abaye gives another din. Bor b'rishut harabim amukah asara v'rachava arba'ah. So you have a full-fledged rishut yachid. It's a bor, it's 10 deep, and it is 4 wide. Mele'a mayim. In this case, it's filled with water. And somebody threw something into the water. That she gives two examples. What did he throw into it? He threw into it kegon even or mayim. He threw either water into it. Now we learned earlier that throwing water on water would be considered a hanaha, obviously, right? Or he threw into it, for example, an even. He threw a rock into it. Now, what's going to happen if you throw a rock into a board? So I'm just going to sink all the way to the bottom. In any event, the Gemara says, Hayav, you're going to be Hayav. Which, what does this teach you over here? That the water that's in the board does not take away from the shi'ur of 10 by 4. Which is, even though the board is filled, we still consider that it has a shi'ud of 10 by 4 to be considered a legitimate reshut hayayid, as opposed to mele'a perot. If let's say the board was filled with perot, with fruit. Now the din is vezarak letocha, and somebody threw something into it and landed on top of the perot, patur. Then you're going to be patur. What's the difference? My tama, mayim lo mevatle mechitzta. The water does not have the ability to mevatel the mechitzot of the board. However, perot, but the fruit, mevatle mechitzta. They have the ability to mevatel the walls of the board. Now the question is, what's the sivara? What's the logic over here? So one logic would be that when you have the mayim, since bottom line, this is the way that Ritva understands it, the walls are still noticeable, which means the water, let's say, is transparent, right? So the walls of the 10 of the board are still nikar, and therefore you're not mevatel the reshut yachid midin nikar. However, when you put perot and you fill it up in the board, what happens? The walls are not noticeable anymore, therefore it takes it out of a reshut hayachid. That's the way that Ritva understands the difference between mayim and perot. However, the Tosafot over here has a question. Tosafot's question is, we learned earlier on yesterday's daf, by a case of a devela, that somebody threw a devela against the wall, right? So we learned that, well, when you throw the devela, the fig against the wall, even though it takes away from the four amot, because now it's not, that's less than four amot, still we said you don't mevatel the devela against the wall. And here we're telling you that when you put the fruit in a board, it's mevatel, which means the fruit has the ability to mevatel the walls of a board. Why is it different than the case of the devela? So the Tosafot answers, the Yeshtoman, I'm reading the fourth line of the Tosafot, the debela ena omedet kol kach litbatel sham bekotel. People don't usually leave a debela on the wall. That's not the place where it belongs. However, kemo shirigilin lebatel perot bebor. People usually would store, for example, Tosafot says, wheat in a bor. And therefore that was a place where they would leave it there. And therefore since they would leave it in the bor, so it becomes mevatel to the bor, has the ability to mevatel the walls of the bor. So again, Tosfot's logic is the perot we're talking about is perot that normally is stored in a bor. And therefore it becomes batel to the bor, and therefore it breaks the shi'ur of the bor. But she'eke, in the case of the devela, which really the people don't leave it on the wall, it's not going to be batil from the shi'ur. So again, either it's working over him midin bitul, because the guy's leaving it there. Therefore, once the guy's leaving it there, it's like it's covered up, becomes like part of the board itself, it covers the shi'ur up. Or, as we explained from the Nidba, that the logic is that you cannot see the walls, nothing to do with bitul. Even if you didn't have a bitul on it, you just drop something that's not transparent into the board. Since the walls are not nikar, it is going to take away from the shi'ur of the shi'ur hayahid. Comes the Gemara and says, Tanya Namerke, we have a bright to support. We just said, Azorek minayam le isretya umina isretya liyam patur. If a person throws from the yam, yam would be the ocean. We learned that an ocean has a din of a karmelit. And therefore, if a person throws from a yam le isratya, isratya is like a santaya that we learned earlier, is considered a shoot harabim. Umina isratya le yam, or he throws from the shoot harabim to the yam, which is karmelit, patur. Rabbi Shimon omer, Rabbi Shimon taught, im yesh bimkom shezarak. If let's say you threw in the ocean, and the place in the ocean where you threw it, amok asara, let's say there's a hole on the bed of the ocean, you know, on the floor of the ocean there's a depression, there's a hole that goes down 10 deep in a havar ba'a hayav. Why? Because now it's landing in that hole, which is 10 deep, 4 wide, even though if it's in the bottom of the ocean, it's obviously filled with water. And therefore, what do you see according to Rabbi Shimon? That a hole 10 by 4 filled with water is still considered a deshut hayachid, and the water is not mevatel the mechitzot. So we brought a braita to support a bayez din that water is not mevatel the mechitza. And the Rishonim do question that seemingly you're bringing it ayah from Rabbi Shimon, but Tanakama doesn't hold like that. Tanakama, this braita, seems to argue. Because Tanakama said, if you throw from the Reshut Yahid to the Reshut Rabim, I'm sorry, to the Karmelit, to the Reshut Rabim, or the Reshut Rabim to the Karmelit, you're going to be patur. And it's Rabbi Shimon that introduced the case of if you have the depression in the bed of the water. So the Mefashim say that Rabbi Shimon is coming to air a case that Tanakama did not talk about. Tanakama just talked about throwing on the ocean and throwing into the Reshut Rabim. He didn't discuss the case of Rabbi Shimon. He'll agree to Rabbi Shimon's case where if you have a depression in the bed of the water that's 10 deep and 4 wide, in the Kanami, Hakami will agree also, you're going to be Hayav. Matnitin denu Mishnah Zorek Arbaramot Pakot. If somebody throws an object for a moth and it hits the wall, if it's above 10 tefachim, again we're talking about where a person is in the Reshut Rabim, if it hits the wall above 10 tefachim, which is considered a mekom petur kezorek ba'avir, it's like he threw it in the airspace, if it landed less than 10 tefachim on the wall kezorek ba'aretz, it's like he threw it on the ground. Now, and if somebody throws an object for a mot in the Reshut Rabim on the ground, one is going to be hayav. So comes the Gemara and says, what are you talking about? How could you tell me if you threw it less than 10 tefachim and hit the wall, you're going to be hayav? It did not rest on the wall. Because when you throw an object against the wall, what happens? It hits the wall, bounces back, and lands down. Now, when it lands down, it's less than 4 amot away, because we're talking where the wall is exactly 4 amot mitzum samot. Exactly, precisely 4 amot. So you're going to throw it against the wall, it bounces off the wall and falls back. So how could you be hayav? Amar Rav Yochanan b'tvila shemina shaninu. So Rav Yochanan said, no, we're talking about a fig that is fat, meaning that it has a stickiness to it, and if when you throw it against the wall, it's going to stick against the wall. That is going to be considered the hanacha. Amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, amar Rav Chaya zarak lemala ma'asara. If let's say a person threw something above 10, and let's say it landed into a hole
of a kolshu, which means there was a little hole, let's say, in the wall, and the item landed in that little hole. So Kanzi Gemaran says, on this case, banu lemachloket Rabbi Meir v'Rabbanan. We came to the machloket of Rabbi Meir and Rabbanan. That what? The Rabbi Meir damar chokekin lehashlim mechayev. The Rabbanan dam ni'en chokekim lehashlim lo mechayev. Let's discuss the machloket of chokekim lehashlim. This was a law that was said by mezuzah. The law of the mezuzah is that one must place a mezuzah on his doorpost, but the doorpost must have a shi'ur. It has to be at least 4 tefachim in its width, and it has to be 10 tefachim high to be considered a legitimate doorpost. Now, in truth, it has to have that shi'ur throughout, meaning the 4 width throughout and the 10 tefachim throughout, we'd call it a rectangle, okay? However, let's say some doors are arched, okay? Which means it starts, let's say, 4 tefachim, right? But as you go up, now it narrows out into an archway. So, we have a great machloket between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir holds like this. If there's enough space in the arch, where if you would chisel it out to the sides, you would be able to get to the width of 4 and the height of 10, so he holds chokekin lehashlim, which means you're able to make believe, chisel out the sides, and therefore it'll be considered that you have a shi'ud of 10 tefachim by 4 tefachim. If you look in your art scrolls, I see that there's a picture there. Your Pirush Chais also have the picture of chokekim lehashlim. Actually, it'll be... Well, I would tell you, look in your art scrolls then. I don't see it in the Pirush High exactly. In any event, the case is obvious. The case is we have the archway, so the Bimini says Yechokek. Again, only we're talking where there's enough space in the archway to get to 4 Tefahim. You can't chisel what you don't have. And therefore, you're able to chisel both up and to the sides. I should point out that this only talks about a case where you have the 4 tefachim with at least 3 tefachim up into the door. Which means if you don't even have 3 tefachim or 4 wide, then you cannot say chokekin. So you have the archway, 3 tefachim up already is 4 wide. Now the rest you're able to chisel out. So the Bimi is going to say the same thing by this case. You threw it against a wall, let's say, which is 10 tefachim. However, it did not land on a spot that is 4 by 4. So therefore, if it didn't land on a spot that's 4x4, you really cannot be hayab, because to be a reshut yahid, it has to be 10 high, and 4x4 to find to be considered a reshut yahid, that if you threw something on it, you're going to be hayab. Here it landed on a kolshu. However, if the wall is thick enough, where you can chisel out into the wall, so to speak, to get the shi'ud of 4x4, the bimir will say, hayab. The same deen of chokekin lashlim. Well, hakamim don't say chokekin lashlim. Hakamim say you need full-fledged shiur. So the same thing over here, where you threw it, it landed at 10. However, it landed on a kolshu. Even though the thickness of the wall will lend itself, if you chiseled it out, you can get to the shiur of 4x4 to value. Hakamim say you don't say chokekin, and therefore you're going to be patur. So the machloket of chokekin lashlim by mezuzah has nafkaminot by Shabbat. Again, you threw an item on a wall. The wall, let's say, was 10. However, it didn't land on a 4x4 spot. To be hayav, it's got to land on a makom chashuv, by 4x4. It landed on a kolshu. So what are you going to do? The bimir will say, chokek. If there's thickness of the wall, to, so to speak, chisel it out, just like you do it by mezuzah, so to speak, chisel it out, and therefore be considered resting on a makom chashuv. Hakamim say, no, comes the Gemara and says, Tanya nameache, we have a braita to support this. The Braita says, Zarak lemala ma'asara, if a person threw above 10, Ba'al kavenacha bechu bechor kolshu, and it came and landed in a chor kolshu, in a small little hole, the bimir mechayev, v'achamim potim. The bimir says, Chayav, based on the rule of chokekin lashtim, and achamim are going to say,
patur. Now we discuss yet another din. Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda comes along and says, Amar Rav, Tel hamitlaket asara mitoch arba. Vezarak venach al gabav chayav. The case of Tel hamitlaket. Meaning, you have in the Rishut HaRabim, in the public domain, you have a slope. A slope, let's say, walking up the slope, has a gradual incline. The incline is, you have it in your books, okay, that'd be good, we can see it. The incline is 4 amot. What picture is that, what number?
124.
That'll be picture 549. So you see you have the incline is 4 amot, and 4 amot you'll get to the top of, let's say, the hill. Okay? The top of the hill would be 10 tefachim. So you have a 10 tefachim hill that has on the side of it an incline of 4 amot. Now that's considered a steep incline, which means most people in the Rishut HaRabim will not access such a steep incline. Therefore, if you have such a proportion of a 4 amot incline in 10 tefachim height, the top of that hill of 10 tefachim will be considered a Rishut HaYachid, even though it's in the public domain. Why? Because the Rabbim are not going to access, because it's too difficult to walk, so that she says, we consider as if the incline is leveled. We consider it's all considered, let's say, elevated, and considered a flat wall. And therefore, it's considered a legitimate Rishut HaYachid on top, not on the incline. The top, which is 10 tefachim by 4 tefachim, would be considered Rishut HaYachid. Now, that's not so pashut, because you would say, what do you mean, it's in the middle of the Rishut HaRabim? People do access it, but say no, they won't access this area, as opposed to, let's say, the next picture, 550, where the incline is less steep. It's a 5 amma incline to get to the 10 tefachim. In such a case, the top of the hill there is not a Rishut HaYachid. It still has the din of a Rishut HaRabim. Why? Because people will walk up that gradual incline, and therefore it does not make the top a Rishut HaYachid. So you have a difference between Tel HaMitlaket. You have one case is a 4 amma, and one case is a 5 amma. The Gemara discusses the 4 amma incline, where it says the top of the mount will be considered a Rishut HaYachid. Comes the Gemara and says, we have a Braita to support the case we just discussed. Now, to understand this Braita, we will just remind ourselves of what a Mavui is. We learned several times that in the olden days they used to live in what's called Hatserot. Right? Hatserot were like courtyards. Okay? And the courtyards had in front of them what's called a Hatser. The houses had in front of them what's called a Hatser. And in front of the Hatser, let's say, you had, let's say, an alley. Okay? That was called the Mavui. Now, a mavui that is opened up into a Rishut HaRabim, which is they all come out of this, their courtyards, they walk into this alley that leads to the Rishut HaRabim. You need to put in the front of the mavui, in front of that alley, some sort of heker, some sort of lehi or korah, a type of pole, in order to remind the people that once they come out of the mavui, which we consider, let's say, a private domain, because it is surrounded by three walls, but the fourth side is open into the Rishut HaRabim, they need something to make it noticeable that this is the Rishut HaRabim, so they don't come to carry. That's one explanation why you put a lehi or korah. In any event, we're discussing now a special situation of a mavui, and the Gemara says, mavui sheshaveh letocho. Let's say you have a mavui where the floor of the mavui is level. It's a regular level floor of the mavui. V'na'asam madron Rishut HaRabim. However, there's a sloping incline at the opening of the mavui that goes down into the Rishut HaRabim. The Rishut HaRabim is lower than the mavui. If you look at picture 551, you see it. The mavui itself is level,
and then at the gate of it, you see it, or at part of the mavui slopes down into the reshut harabim. Okay, that is the first case. Or shavel reshut harabim, or as in picture 552, the opening of the mavui, as you see, is equal with the opening of the reshut harabim. It's on the same level. It's shaveh. The reshut harabim is shaveh to the opening of the mavui, but the mavui goes down. So you have an incline, a slope into the mavui. Either way, if you're sloping down into the reshut harabim, or you're sloping down into the mavui, oto mavui eno tzarich lo lechi velo korah. That mavui does not need not a lechi and not a korah, because the incline itself, we're talking, as we will see in a moment, the same shiur of incline that we discussed now, 4 amot. 10 tefachim within 4 amot, which means the incline in 4 amot will get to 10 tefachim. It's a steep incline. So we said in such a case earlier, it's considered what? As if it is standing upright like a wall. So therefore, these inclines over here are considered a heker for the mavui. So you see a proof to what we just said. Just like l'inyan Shabbat, l'inyan reshut yachid, that if you have such a steep incline, we consider what? As if it's considered a wall. It makes like a reshut yachid. So the same thing over here. These inclines in the mavui will allow us not to make a heker, because that itself becomes the heker. Then the Braita continues and says, Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel omer, tela mitlaket asara betoch arba, bezalak menachal gabav chayav. He says it befirush at the end of the Braita, that if you have a tela mitlaket, you have this mound that is 10 tefachim high, with a gradual slope, or it's not so gradual, a slope of 4 amot on the side of it. So if somebody throws on top of that area from the reshut harabim, it's going to be considered the reshut yachid, the top of the mountain, and they're going to be hayav. So you see, the law of tela mitlaket is substantiated by a braita, by the case of the mavui. And then you see clearly, Rabbi Hanya ben Gamliel said the case explicitly. Comes the Mishnah and says, Zarak letoch arba amot. Person threw, let's say, for practical purposes, a ball, he threw it within 4 amot. Which means the strength of his throw only had enough to go within, let's say, 4 amot. But what happened? Then it kalgel chutz ledar amot. The wind took it and blew it past 4 amot into the reshut harabim. Patur. And we understand that case. Why patur? Because bottom line, since your strength only was, let's say, enough to take it less than 4 amot, and the wind carried it more than 4 amot, so therefore you're going to be patur, because it wasn't you. However, the opposite. Chutz ledalet amot. If a person, let's say, threw a ball outside of 4 amot, which it had the strength to go outside 4 amot, v'nit galgel letok dalet amot chayav. And then the wind took it. It went chutz ledalet amot. Then the wind took it back. It got caught in a whirlwind and brought it back within 4 amot. And then it landed. You're going to be chayav. I was going to ask the obvious question. V'alonah. What do you mean? In the second case of the Mishnah, when you threw it, so true, it went 4 amot away, but it never landed. To be hayav, you always need an akira anaha. Here, it just got caught in a whirlwind and came back. Where did it end up landing? Metoch arba amot. So how could you be hayav in the second case of the Mishnah? Vehalonach. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, you have to say that it did land on something, which means when you threw it out for amot, either it landed on something momentarily even, and then it came back from the wind, so therefore you indeed had a hanaha. Or as Rashi tells us, you could even say it got caught in the wind momentarily, meaning even if it stagnated even for a moment in the air by the wind, that would be considered a hanaha, so long as it was within 3 tefachim of the ground. So therefore Rashi gives us two options how there can be anaha. Either it landed on a mashu, or the wind actually suspended it momentarily within three tefahim of the ground. Now we know within three tefahim of the ground you have the din of lavud, and it's considered munach because it was suspended, which it was not moving. So we see over here that you will say lavud in a case where you threw something so long as the item is suspended. Meaning, if the item is moving, even though it's within three, you would not say lavud. Rabbi Yohanan's only saying because it actually came to a stop, either on something or in the air itself within three. So comes the Gemara and says, Tanya Namech, we have a bright, let us support what we just said. Zarak chutz ledalet amot. Right, he threw the item past Dalet Amot. V'dachavto aruach, and the wind pushed it. V'chnisato, and brought it back in. V'afapi shechazra v'otziato, even though, let's say the wind came and brought it out again, patur. Because bottom line, it did not stop. It was just, you know, going back and forth in the air. Achazto aruach mashu. However, once you threw it out for amot, and the wind stopped it, even for a moment, even though it came back in within four amot, going to be hayab. So what do you see over here? You see over here that the wind stopping it even though it didn't land actually can make a legitimate hanacha, one going to be hayab. Amar Rava comes along and teaches, Toch shlosha lirabbanan, tzarich hanacha al gabe mashu. So Rava speaks this out clearly now. He says, the rabbis, who are the rabbis? The rabbis that argued on Rabbi Akiva. If you remember, we learned earlier in our first Mishnah, where a person threw from the Shuta Yachid to the Shuta Yachid. With the Rishut HaRabim in the middle, Rabbi Akiva said, Chayav. Because Rabbi Akiva employed the principle of Kluta, where he said it's when it goes over the Rishut HaRabim, it's considered enveloped in the Rishut HaRabim, it's considered as if it rests, so therefore it's considered he threw from the Rishut HaYachid to the Rishut HaRabim. Whereas Chachamim do not employ the principle of Kluta, therefore you threw from the Rishut HaYachid to a Rishut HaYachid. However, they come along and say, let's say it landed within three. Let's say you threw it from the Rishut HaYachid and it cruised over the Rishut HaRabim within three tefahim. Still Rava says, according to the Chachamim, you're not going to be Chayab unless it actually stopped for a moment. Which means when you throw something, the fact that it's within three tefahim is not enough. It actually has to stop momentarily. Okay, that's the opinion of Rava. Again, I'll read that inside. Amar Batok, Shloshad Rabbanan, Sarich Hanacha Al Gabeh Mashu. Now, Rashi tells us another manifestation of this case as well. We know the law on Shabbat is to be Hayab a Korban. One has to do the Melacha without any knowledge. From the beginning of the Melacha to the end of the Melacha. And then after he does the Melacha, he finds out that he transgressed something, then he has to bring a Korban Hatat. But if let's say in the middle of the Melacha he realized he was doing something wrong, so then already he is not subject to a Korban Hatat, because he had a Yedi'ah, he had knowledge during the sin itself. The Yedi'ah must come after the sin is done. So let's take a case where a guy is throwing something for Amot in the Rishut HaRabim, right? And now it's about to land, it's within two tefahim of the ground, right, two tefahim, let's say, where normally you'd say lavud, and at that point the guy remembered the Isur Shabbat. According to Rava, we don't say lavud in such a case, and therefore it's not considered as if it landed, and therefore your yediyah is considered done in the middle of the act, and therefore you're not going to be subject to a korban chatat, which means if you held lavud. So already at that time, within 3 to 5 of the ground, it's considered landed already. Finished. Too late already. You did the akiran. You did the hanaga. But Rava says no. When you're throwing something within and it goes within three, it's not enough. It actually has to come at a rest. That either the wind has to stop it or it has to actually land. So therefore, nafka mina, in a case where a guy threw something b'shogeg, right? And at the time he threw it, he didn't know it. And now it came within the time of the ground, and he realized it. Since according to Rava, we don't say Lavud in such a case, because it did not rest yet, so therefore his Yidiyah is going to exempt him from a Korban, Hatas, that's another Nafkamina in Rava's case. Number one, the case of Kluta, which is when you throw it from the Shuti Yachid and it cruises over the Shuti within three, you're still not going to be Hayav. It should be pointed out, even though we learned earlier in the Perek, where we actually had a Braita that showed that if it's within three Tefahim, everybody would agree that you're going to be Hayav. So it's a big question, how does Rava, you know, argue on a Braita? We brought from the Chalkiyah Bartuvi, and then he quoted a Braita, so that he shouldn't discuss that question. But Rava is clearly saying what he's saying. So comes the Gemara and says, Yati moremor vekamal elashmata. Moremor was sitting and he said over this halakha from Rava. Abale Rabina le Moremor. So Rabina told Moremor, Lav ainu matniti. He said, what does Rava have to quote this halakha over here? That you're telling me that within three is not considered a hanakha? What's the hidush? It's our Mishnah. Well, what did our Mishnah say? So Yamana says, Ve'amar of Yohanan v'u shenach al gabe mashu. Which means, our Mishnah said if you threw something outside of four amot, right, and the wind took it back in, and the Gemara asked, oh, it didn't rest. And the Yohanan answered what? No, it rested on a mashu. Now, why did the Yohanan have to say it rested on a mashu? Why didn't he just say it was within three? Ela, because within three without stopping is not considered a hanaha. So therefore, Rava, your statement is actually a Mishnah as interpreted by the Yohanan. Now, it seems that the Yohanan's interpretation to the Mishnah was very well known and obvious to the Hakamim. So again, why would Rava have to teach me that when you throw something that's within three, it's not considered Munah? Isn't that the deen of the Mishnah? You threw a ball. It went outside of the four amot, right? And then it came back in. So the Gemara said, it didn't rest. So what was the Yohanan's answer? No, when it was outside the four amot, it rested on something. From the fact that he said it rested on something, and he did not say that it was within three, that shows you what? That within three tefahim of the ground, even we don't say lavud. It's not considered as if it rested. It actually has to rest. So that's what the Yohanan is teaching. So Rava, what's the hidush of your statement? So the Gemara says, Amale, so he told him back, Mitkalgel ka amart. Well, you're bringing me a proof from Mitkalgel? Mitkalgel en sofo lanuach. Which means in that case over there, I could tell you, you know why the Navu doesn't work over there? I would tell you because it's not destined to land over there. Because it went out and the winds end up bringing it back in. So in that case, if you just brought me that case, I would tell you what? Maybe in that case the Navu doesn't work. However, amal hai, kevan de sofo lanuach. But in the case of the Shogeg case, let's say, where the guy threw an object, right? Eventually it's going to land. Which means it went four amot, now it's on the way down. It's going to land in that spot. So I would have thought that since it's going to land in that spot, right? It's on the way down now. So I would have thought that even within three, we consider it lavud, and it was considered munah. That's why he says, kamashma landed, even in a case where it's destined to land in the spot, but when you throw it, bottom line, it's got to land. We don't say the deen of three tefahim. Again, if you just brought out Mishnah, I would not know the deen. Because I'd say, out Mishnah, you know why you don't say lavud? Because bottom line, when you throw it more than four amot, is it going to land there? No, the wind's taking it back. So I would say, even though it's within three tefahim, we don't consider it on the ground, because bottom line, it's in a whirlwind. The wind is going to pull it back. Therefore, that's why you don't say it over there. But maybe in a case where you threw it regularly, not in a whirlwind, and it's destined to land where you threw it, maybe you'll say the rule of lavud. That's what Rava came along and said. No, even in a case where the guy threw it, and let's say it was within three, and then the guy remembered that he's doing an isur, it's not considered it landed yet, therefore it's not going to be subject to a korban hatat, even though it's going to land on that spot. You don't say lavud in a case where you are throwing the object. So therefore, Rava's deen needed to be spoken out, even though we had the Mishnah. Again, why? Because from the Mishnah, you don't learn the Hiddush. Because from the Mishnah, all you learn is what? When you throw it and it's coming back. when it's coming back. That's why you don't say Lavu, because it's not destined to land where you threw it. But the Rabbi Shaydush says, even if it's destined to land where you threw it, still you don't say Lavu. It's got to actually land. Comes the Mishnah and says, Hazorek Bayam. Arba Amod Patur. Again, if a person throws something in the yam would be the ocean. The ocean, we learned, is a karmelit, and therefore one is going to be patur. Let's say you had a rekak mayim. The rekak mayim will explain as a large puddle. And the puddle was going across the reshut rabim. So now the question is, if a person, let's say, throws something and it lands in the puddle, what's the status of the puddle? Is the puddle considered reshut rabim or not? So it says, if let's say the rekak mayim is there and the reshut rabim, people walk through it, they walk through the puddle, so if he throws 4 amot in the puddle itself, the puddle is going to be considered a reshut rabim because it's accessed by the people. Obviously it's a type of puddle where people do walk through it, so then we're going to be hayav. So the Gemara asks, the Mishnah asks, Vekamo rekak mayim, what's the shi'ur of a rekak mayim? Pachot ma'asara tefahim. It has to be less than 10 tefahim deep. Then we'll say what? People will, let's say, walk through it and access and ask an avidin of a reshut harabim. Comes the Rashi, Vekamo rekak mayim, kama omko. What's the depth of this puddle? Denema akat reshut rabimu velo na'asa karmelit. If it's already 10 tefachim, it's going to have a status of a karmelit. Never it's going to be a rabbinical domain. But less than 10 tefachim deep, people will still walk through it. The Gemara assumes, Mishnah assumes, and therefore it's going to be considered reshut rabim. Therefore, if you throw 4 amot into the rekak, you're going to be hayab. The Mishnah concludes, rekak mayim, reshut rabim alechet bo, if you have a rekak mayim, a puddle, in the reshut rabim, when the people are walking through it, hazurek mitokot dal alamot hayav. If somebody throws dal alamot in it, he's going to be hayav. Now, obviously, this mishnah is redundant. You told me the exact same case in the resha. 2 lines into the mishnah was imayad rekak mayim reshut rabim alechet bo hazurek mitokot dal alamot hayav. And the last line of the mishnah is if you had a rekak mayim reshut rabim alechet bo hazurek arba alamot mitokot hayav. Why would the mishnah repeat the same exact din twice? So the Gemara says, Amaleahum Rabbanan Rava. Certain rabbi told Rava, Pishnama hiluch hiluch trezimne. I understand why the Mishnah would tell me the Reshut Rabim Mahalechet Po, that the people in the Reshut Rabim were walking through this rakak. I understand why you tell me the din of hiluch twice. Because if you look in the Mishnah again, it says those words, v'reshut rim mehalechet bo in the resha, and the last line of the Mishnah also says, v'reshut rim mehalechet bo in the surface. I can justify why it says hiluch hiluch twice. Why do you have to tell me the case where the people are walking through it twice? You know why? Hakamashmalan, hiluch al yedei adahak sheme hiluch, tashmish al yedei adahak, la sheme tashmish. Which means like this, even though we'll all agree that it's not the most accessible thing to walk through such a rekak mayim that is, almost 10 tefachim deep. We all agree that that is not the normal way to access the street. But you know what? The Mishnah is teaching you chiddush. That if people walk through it, even though it's hiluch al yedei adarak, even though it's a difficult walking, it's still considered what? Used, and therefore it's considered a shoot at a beam, and therefore if you throw in that the kak, it's going to be considered hayav. To teach you the principle what? That hiluch al yedei adahak is considered a legitimate hiluch. To the exclusion of what? A tashmish al yedei adahak. What is that? When somebody, let's say, is in the shoot at a beam, we learned earlier that if you have, let's say, a mound, 9 tefahim in the reshut harabim. Now, even though things within 3 tefahim and 9 or 10 is usually called a karmelit, but 9 is a shi'ur where we said rabim mekatfim aleh, where we said people use that measurement, which is a very comfortable measurement for people, for them to fix their loads, which means based on the normal human height and the load that he has on his back, a mound of 9 tefahim, people will go and use it. Therefore, the mound to set their load upon. And therefore, a mound of 9 tefahim in the reshut is considered reshut rabim. Why? Because the rabim will use it. It's easily accessible. But let's say another case. Let's say you have a board in reshut rabim that goes down 9 tefahim. Now you could argue and say, well, yeah, well, that's very good, it's very accessible to the people as well, because they'll store things in that shi'ud of nine. Kaz the Gemaran says, yeah, they might store things in that board, but you know what? That's considered tashmish al yedei dahak. That's using it, but it's not a comfortable use that you have to bend down and go put your stuff down nine tefahim in the ground. That's not going to be considered a shoot arabim. Whereas walking through a puddle, that's nine tefahim. That's hiluch al yedei dahak. Hiluch al yedei dahak is considered hiluch, and therefore that puddle will be considered a shoot harabim. But tashmish al yedei dahak, which means if you want to make it a shoot arabim by using it, the use has to be a common, comfortable use. Like the case of the man that is nine tefahim, high, where you'll use it. However, a board that's nine tefahim in the reshut and a beam, the only way you use it is ayyadeh adak. It's not such an easy usage item. You've got to bend down and stick the things nine tefahim in the ground. Therefore, that nine tefahim depression in the ground is not going to be considered a reshut and a beam. So, hiluch ayyadeh adak, shema hiluch. And therefore, this rekak that people walk through, even though it's not the most accessible, but by the way, they walk through it, even though it's difficult, it's enough to make it a reshut harabim. But if you want to make it a reshut harabim, not based on walking through it, but based on using it, then the use has to be a tashmish shelo al yedei adahak. Like the case of the item that they use for their loads, which was not above the ground, but beneath the ground, it's considered tashmish al yedei adahak, last shemet tashmish. Now how do we learn that from the Mishnah? Because the Mishnah said the case of hiluch twice. Which means, if rabim ha-mehalchim bo, that's the first thing, which means if people walk through it, then it's going to be considered a shoot rabim. If they don't walk through it, it won't be considered a shoot rabim. That's the first thing. And then it says it again, im rabim ha-mehalchim bo, to come and tell you, only by hiluch do we say that if they walk through it, it's going to be considered a reshut rabim. To exclude something else. To exclude what? Tashmish. That if you want to make it a reshut rabim al yedet tashmish usage, not by walking, then it's got to be a comfortable, normal use. To the exclusion of a board reshut rabim that is nine tefahim. So now the Gemara says, fine, so you took care of the redundancy of the word hiluch. However, correct. Ela rekak rekak trezem ne lamali. So why then does the Mishnah have to repeat rekak rekak? Because the point of the Mishnah is to tell me that you have an area in the Reshut Rabim where people are struggling to walk through it. It's still considered a Reshut Rabim. So why did I have to repeat the same case twice? Rekak rekak. You could have given me different examples of impediments in the Reshut Rabim where people still can walk through that have the status of Reshut Harabim. Why give me the same example twice? Puddles and puddles. Rekak, rekak. So the Gemara says, Had bimot hachama, v'had bimot hageshamim. It's coming to tell you, one is talking about a rekak in the summer months, and one is telling you in the winter months. What do you mean? What do I need two of them for? V'slichi, you need both cases. Di'i tana chada, if you only told me one case, haba mina, ani mi bimot hachama. I would say maybe the deen of Erekak, that's considered a reshut harabim, is only in the summer months. You know why? The avidi inchid the mazgil akure nafshayu. Because people will walk through the puddle to cool themselves off. So maybe I'll say only the puddle in the summer is considered a reshut harabim because people will access it to cool themselves off. But I might say in the winter, it's cold outside. Maybe people are not going to walk through it. And if you only told me the case of the winter, I would say, the kev and the mitanfeh, since people are dirty already in the winter because it's raining and their clothes are all full of dirt anyway from the muddy roads, ugh, patu, they don't care to walk through it because big deal, their clothes are dirty already, so they might as well walk through the puddles. I say in the winter, it's considered a shoot harabim. But I might say in the summer, where their clothes are clean, they might not walk through. Therefore, the Mishnah has to say, rekak, rekak. That not only in the winter, but also the summer, not only the summer, but also the winter, both cases, both seasons of the year, the rekak is going to be considered a reshut harabim. That's why it says rekak twice. That's the first answer. Abaye amar, it's tariq. Abaye says, no, we have a different reason why you have to say rekak twice. I would say that maybe the only time this rekak is considered a reshut harabim, where it's not four amot in width, which means the width of the rekak is less than 4 amot. Why? Because I'd say less than 4 amot, the guy will walk through it. But if it's very wide, meaning it's 4 amot wide, I might think, I might think that he might circumvent it, which means if it's very wide, he's not going to walk through it. He might go around it. Kamash ma'lan, that no, even if it's 4 amot wide, still it's considered a reshut rabim. If people, because people will walk through it, that'll make it a reshut harabim. So it's a second reason why you have to tell me the nekak twice. It's coming to tell me two scenarios. What's the first scenario? Whether it is less than 4 amot wide, and even if it is more than 4 amot wide, it's still considered shut harabim. Now we go to the third answer why it says nekak twice. Rav Asher amar, it's tarich. We need nekak twice. Salga dadakamina. I would have thought ani mili echadavi. I'm going to read it now according to one text, then I'll tell you the other text. Ani mili echadavi arba'a. Arba'a means four tefahim. Jeez, he's learning different. He says, I would say what? I would say only when I'd say the nekak is four tefahim wide. Aval, but if let's say the nekak is less than four tefahim wide, I would say that he'll jump over it. Which means, if it's less than four tefahim wide, it's an easy jump. So therefore, I might say in that case, it's not considered a shut harabim, because what? Most people will jump over it. Kamash malan, no, even if it's less than four tefahim wide, still we're going to give it a din of the shut harabim. Why? Because by the way, there are people that will walk through it, even though most people will jump over it. Still has the status of the shut harabim. Therefore, if you're throwing it, it's going to be hayav. So let's review the three answers first. The first answer was rekak rekak to tell me the chidush in the winter and the summer. The second answer was to tell me the chidush of what? That was Abaye's answer. How wide it is, which means not only if it's less than 4 amot, but even if it is 4 amot, where we would see that most people would, let's say, circumvent it and go around it. Kamash well know that since some people still would walk through it, it's going to be considered a reshut harabim. And the third answer of Rav Asher is what? Four tefachim, which is not only if it's four tefachim wide, I'm going to consider it to the shut harabim, because certainly people will just walk right through it, but even if it's less than four tefachim, where people will usually jump over it, still we're going to give it a status of the shut harabim. Now that's the way our text has, but if you look at Rashi says, in the Buddha Matril, Hecha de'avu rechavo dalir amot. Clearly that she had enough asher, not tefahim, but he actually had amot. Now, if you have amot, what is Rav Asher saying? So that she says, "Delav urchel mifse'eh ela avre begaveh," which means, according to the way Rav Asher learns, circumventing is not an option. It's either you jump it or you walk through it. That's the way Rav Asher learns. So therefore, say like this. If it's less than 4 amot, so in that case he says what? Jump. He says you'll jump it. He says, but if it's more than 4 amot, he says you're not going to jump it. Adrabah, you'll walk through. So therefore the chidush is, according to Rav Asher, that whether it's less than 4 amot, where normally people would jump it, still is to be considered a reshut harabim. You only see a big difference now between Abaye and Rav Asher, which means where Abaye held if it's 4 amot, that's a reason for them not to go through it. That's the reason for them to circumvent it. Whereas according to Rav Asher, 4 amot is a reason to go through it, because they're not going to be able to jump across it. In any event, those are the three she thought. Comes to Gemara and says, Rav Asher is following his reasoning. When we see another case, he said, Rav Asher, Hai man de zarik, a guy threw something. Venach aguda de gamla. It landed on the plank of a bridge, mechayev. It's going to be hayav. Shared abim bochim bo, because many people walk across it or over it. What are we talking about? We're talking about a plank that is not flush with the other planks on the bridge, meaning there's gaps in between this plank and the ones next to it. So most people, they don't like to walk on such a plank because their foot's going to get stuck in the crack. So therefore, what do most people do when they walk over this plank? They jump it. Still, Rav Asher says, if you threw something and it landed on that plank, it's to be considered as if you threw it into a reshut harabim. What do you see from over here? Since there are some people that will walk on it, even though most people will jump it, just like the case of the nekak, even though most people, let's say, will jump it, but some people will walk through it. Therefore, it's enough to be considered a reshut harabim. Just look at the Rashi. Aguda de gamla al daf shemegesher. Right, you have a plank on the bridge. Hamutal roch habegesher. That's placed to the width of the bridge. Kishara dapim umuvdal behavero. But it's separate from its friend. Meaning, there's a gap in between. Hayab. Even though there are people that jump over it, there's enough people. She's master, it has to be a substantial amount of people, right? He says there's a lot of people that will still walk on it. The same thing by the rekak. Even though there'll be people that will jump it, but since there are enough people that will walk through it, that still gives it a status of the shoot. So let's just review clearly the deed that came out of this last Mishnah. The last Mishnah discussed a rekak that was indeed a shoot harabim. So we gave a deen that what, so long as people walk through it, as a deen of a shoot harabim, therefore if you throw four amot into the rekak, you're going to be hayab. The Mishnah actually repeated this case twice to teach us two chedushim. Number one, that what, so long as the people are holech betocho, it's considered a shoot harabim. If they're not holech betocho, of course it would not be considered a shoot harabim. We consider, say, a karmelit or mekom petut based on its measurements. Furthermore, we said that only hiluch al yedeh adahak shemei hiluch, but tashmish al yedeh adahak, lashemet tashmish, to make it a reshut harabim. Second chedush, we said that the reason why the Mishnah chose the case of rekak twice is to tell me whether it's in the summer, whether it's the winter, according to the chedushim of each one, whether it's four amot or less than four amot, or according to one gersa in Navasheh, four tefahim or less than four tefahim, or even in Navasheh, four amot, less than four amot. Comes to the Mishnah and says, Hazorek min hayam liyabasha. A person throws from the yam. Yam, we said, is the ocean, which has a din of a karmelit. He throws from the yam to the yabasha, to the dry land, which is considered a shoot hayachid. Or he throws from the yabasha to the yam, from the dry land to the yam, which is also the shoot hayachid to a karmelit. Yam the sfina. Or from the yam to the boat. The boat is considered a shoot hayachid. Or the opposite, from the boat to the yam, or from one boat to another boat, that's reshut yachid to a reshut yachid. In all these cases, patur. Now the last case, you're going to be patur, only in a case where, let's say, you made a, where you didn't make a ruveh haserot, because technically, you're throwing from one boat to another boat. Both boats are considered reshut hayachids. Now, if you made an Iruv between the two boats, or let's say you owned both boats, where you didn't have to make an Iruv, then it would be permissible to throw from one boat to another boat. You only be patur because, let's say, either they were owned by two people and you did not make the proper Iruv. Now, all the other cases, the reason why you can be patur is because she went from a Reshut Yachid to a Karmelit, or a Karmelit to a Reshut Yachid, which is not considered biblically forbidden. Sefinot, Kishurot, Zubazu. Or let's say you have boats that are tied to each other, metatari mizu mizu. Then you can carry from one to another, so long as you made the proper eruveh haserot, or they're owned by one person. Since they're tied together, we're not concerned that they might detach, and you're going to have, let's say, the ocean in between them, so to break the eruv. Which means if you had, let's say, an eruv haserot between two boats, right, owned by different people, they were attached together, so you can carry from one boat to the other. But let's say they weren't tied together. Then you're concerned the kenmelit in between, which is the ocean, that already breaks the viability of the erubeh chasurot. So that's what we only allow to carry from one boat to another when they are tied. Okay? He may not kishurot. However, if they're not kashur, afapishe mukafot, even though they're close to each other, en metaltelin mezu lezu. So that is the deen of the Mishnah. We will stop over here and we will continue with the Gemara tomorrow. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen.